a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. All right, kids, here we go. Episode 300, ladies and gentlemen. I cannot believe I've done 300 of anything in this world. And as promised, I have something special and experimental for episode 300. This is going to be the very first distance interview on The Counterposition. And I have now signed up and I'm using ringer.com. That's ringr.com. It's a cool new tool that podcasters and broadcasters are using. I think Gimlet, some big guns are using this, and it sounds pretty good. So we're still kind of figuring out the levels and everything, the audio levels. So if things are a little out of kilter volume wise on the first one, you're going to have to forgive us. But, so hiding in the background, patiently waiting to be interviewed, who else would I possibly interview other than maybe Chris Special Treat Stefanik? Who would I interview for my 300 show except for, please give a big Counterposition episode number 300 round of applause. Welcome to the lovely and talented, the one and only Michael Miley.
I love that movie 300, man. It's totally gory and a lot of good graphics in it.
This is the Counterposition. Oh,
Michael. I'm happy to be here, dude. Yeah.
What's up, man?
It's sunny, beautiful, about 70-ish degrees here in Camarillo, California, the beautiful Camarillo, California. Loving life.
Totally. It's pretty nice here now. We had a blizzard that didn't happen. They said that we were going to have this huge blizzard, right? And then it just didn't happen at all. Like, it was like, I guess it just, we got a bunch of rain, but it wasn't, you know, anything to speak of. The thing is with Denver is that it'd be horrible to be a weather person here, because they're like, hey, we're going to get this a foot of snow. And then it just rains. And the difference was 5 degrees. So that's the only difference. It's 5 degrees, right? So, yeah. So it's always nice. Camarillo has pretty nice weather.
I just read we have the most temperate, consistent climate of anywhere on planet Earth. Now, I invite the listeners to Google that. I didn't follow up on it, but somebody was very confident in giving me this statistic, and I found it pretty funny.
Camarillo, California, in particular.
Yes, in particular. Yeah, I mean, it's literally you can predict it's going to be between, you know, 50 and 70 for like 95% of the year. Even in the blistering summer, it's totally temperate and nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Ventura kind of goes between, you know, the mid 60s and the early 80s.
Yeah.
But it's pretty close. And the thing about Camarillo, though, is that it's close enough to the coast to get that coastal effect to even things out. But it's not close enough to the coast to get those weird swings from the marine layer. So yeah. That makes sense that it's not, it's a little more stable. Ventura, I can remember when I was going to Thomas Aquinas College out between Santa Paula and Ojai, it would be freezing up there. Or I remember even the other direction. I remember when I had my shop out in Fillmore, it was 111 in Fillmore one summer, just like there's a heat wave. And right on the coast at C Street, right there by In-N-Out Burger, was 67 degrees in Ventura.
Nice. Yeah. We're right over the hill from Thousand Oaks. It'll be 105 degrees in Thousand Oaks, and it'll be like 72 down here. Like you get down the hill and it's just 30 degree difference. It's just insane. And I love it. That's why we live here. Plus my mom lives here and she helps with the kids. And so.
Yeah. There's some decent people in Camarillo. I know a couple other people that, that hang out in Camarillo, you know, a few, you know,
yeah. Yeah, some really great friends.
One guy that likes to hang out in ice baths every once in a while. Of course, we're talking about the lovely and talented Justin Schneer. And
shout everyone, out.
Shout out to Justin Schneer and everyone who's playing the drinking game on the counter position. I had to drink just now. Did you know that Justin's name is one of the rules on my drinking game?
Oh, no way. No, I didn't know that.
Did you know there's a drinking game associated with my show?
Well, you know, I'm a huge fan of your show. Now you're making me look bad because I somehow missed that in all of your 299 previous episodes.
Come on, man. Yeah. So, early on, by the time you got into it, I had quit kind of joking about the drinking game as much. Yeah. So, if I say Justin Schneer, Kevin Clay's name, you have to drink. If I tell a story that I've obviously told in the last 10 episodes, but I don't remember telling it, you have to drink. If I use a pedantic word, a turn of phrase, or Latin, and then make a basic grammar mistake in the exact same sentence, you have to drink. If I use the phrase mode of engagement, you have to drink. Everybody. Now, if anyone's actually playing, they're trashed right now because they just drank four drinks in 1 minute when I explained that. I'm giving you a dispensation on that one sentence. From counter. All right. So dude, Michael Miley. So you've been like rolling around. So my listeners that maybe have, it's been a while since Michael's been on. Michael is the drummer of Rival Sons and one of the best drummers working as far as I'm concerned. And so you're my one friend. You're one of my two friends and you're my closer of two friends that are honest to goodness, bona fide, full on rock stars. So you've been rolling around Europe, right? You guys have been touring in Europe, right?
Yeah. We wrapped up the 13 months with Black Sabbath. I think the first time I was on the show, we were just starting with Black Sabbath, right?
And, yeah.
So we wrapped up February 4th, final show in Birmingham, UK. And it's actually the first show I watched top to bottom of the whole. We did 81 shows. And so I was like, I'm going out there and watching this final show from top to bottom just to get a sense of this final, you know, the nostalgia, the finality of it. And so it was super fun. And then literally the next day we started a 31-day tour, debuting the Teatro Fiasco, we're calling it. And we did a European tour, 31 days, 16 countries, and it was a success. It was a smash. And it was us, a poet and a DJ. And so rather than start, you know, having like three or four bands go on before and blow out everybody's ears before we go on, we wanted to do something more artistic and something vibey, something challenging to our audience, you know, especially to have an English speaking poet in like a tertiary market in France. It actually went over very well. And we had a DJ called, Howie Pyro, and, he has, search him out in Toxica Radio. He plays 50s and 60s garage rock. And he's super weird, super cool. And by the way, the poet's name is Derek Brown. He's great. He's a little, maybe some of the listeners, he might be a little vulgar at times, but, it's worth it because he's very great with words and as a poet should be. And he's a somewhat of a comedian. So it just kind of was a lighthearted thing. And then by the time we take the stage, it's, you're ready for some rock and roll and your ears aren't blown out. And so it was great. And now I've been home, almost 3 weeks and just being Mr. Mom and wearing shorts and a t-shirt in my Vans and running errands and fixing up my garage and playing my brand new Roland TD50 drum kit, and so I can practice quietly in the garage and not wake any kiddos up, and and doing some ice baths as well.
Dude, so that's so funny. You go for I have a lot of friends that have these gigs where they do one thing and they're on the road doing that thing. And then you like come home and switch it to like totally different gear. I mean, there's like some people that are still kind of living that rock and roll lifestyle or whatever that they come back to America and they're still kind of out every night and partying and it shows and being a rock star. But like you literally roll in t-shirt, shorts, Vans, and you're like taking your, you're like going to daily mass and like ocean swimming with somebody.
Especially for Lent, I've been trying to go to daily mass. I probably average 3 or 4 times a week, just due to scheduling and you know, just the getting used to the schedule of being home and helping out my wife and stuff. And I've been taking my son, when I go to daily mass, and it's been really fun, just a little bonding time. And so he can get used to it. And he's 3 and a half. So he's starting to do, sign of the cross, and he says, amen. And we'll walk into church and he'll be like, this is where Jesus is. Right. You know, and it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. And then he'll look at the picture of Mary and he's like, that's Jesus' mom. And so, it's adorable. And I love molding my little boy. And I have a 5-month-old daughter who's a formidable character already. So,
yeah, you might as well just start building a fence around, unless you're going to move several times, because, you know, I have a feeling your daughter is going to end up looking like her mom, and you're just going to need like a really big, boys are going to bring like ladders, you know?
Yeah.
We're
going to encourage the convent. I'll tell you that.
This one-way bus ticket at 15. That was my plan if I ever have daughters, which no one's really trying to help with that project right now. But all right, so let's go to the break. And when we get back, I want to dig into a little deeper and talk about family and some stuff with you and find out what's going on with you and Rival Sons. All right, we'll be right back in a second with Michael Miley. You're listening to The Counterposition. I'll see you on the other side.
Let my sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
Let me skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. Only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your digitally moved across the universe by technology host, Andrew Whaley. And I am still here with Michael Miley. Welcome back, Miley.
I am so happy to be here once again.
So I've been catching slack from a couple of my listeners for saying humble host too often. So I've been trying to come up with new adjectives, and it's turned into this big, long string of words, adjectives about what kind of host I am. So,
yeah, well, part of humility, I don't think is actually saying you're humble. So I don't know. But I understand that the humble host is a moniker for, you know, it's a long time used moniker.
I'm pretty humble, Michael. I think of all my great virtues, I think my humility might be the greatest one. I mean, it's hard to say, but I'm more humble than most people you'll meet. I'm definitely more humble than you are. I have like a lot of humility. All right. So you're back in the States.
Yeah.
Taking the boy to mass, hanging out with the fam. You're Mr. Mom.
My true vocation, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, I think that could be a good modern remake of the film Mr. Mom, where it's like rock star Mr. Mom. You know,
totally. Like, yeah. You know, they have remakes all over the place now.
Right. You should shoot that. You should be Michael Miley is Mr. Mom rebooted. You know, that would be great. It'd be kind of like Mr. Mom meets School of Rock meets Latin mass, you know, kind of a thing. It'd be awesome. So you see, then you mentioned that your true vocation.
Yeah.
I think that's interesting. So let's talk about that. So here you are, you travel the world playing music for tens of thousands of people. You're about to make, I'm assuming, record number 7 at this point. And it's like, so you're known, you have a Gretsch sponsorship and all these sponsorships and all this. And you're saying that what you're doing now, rocking your baby to sleep and hanging out, taking your kid to mass, that's your true vocation. Talk to me about that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, before, I don't know if some of the listeners heard my first one where I share my testimony, but I'm a convert. So, but growing up, even in the secular world, vocation just means your job. And then it wasn't until I became a Catholic that, and then I got a spiritual director where we actually discuss what vocation actually is in Catholic life. And my spiritual director says, you know, your stairway to heaven is through your wife and family. And
now, did he just say that because it's a Led Zeppelin song in your
own? No, I think I don't think he cares about Led Zeppelin, but maybe he was. I don't know if he was trying to be.
You should remake Stairway to Heaven.
We got a ton of reboots here that we're gonna. Yeah,
you could remake Stairway to Heaven to just be like, you know, there's a rock star who's sure that he has to take his kid down to the store, and maybe they'll go to mass and get some coffee. That'd be amazing. That would be perfect.
Yeah. So my spiritual director sort of kind of led me into this. And then, you know, you read a bunch of Catholic literature and talking about vocation, or like, you know, St. Jose Maria was really big into vocation and the work of God, Opus Dei and stuff. And finding spirituality, you know, Paul tells us to pray ceaselessly, right? And so. St. Paul. Sorry, that's my convert in me, just saying Paul.
Well, he is Paul. I mean, he's humble, yeah. So he doesn't insist on the saint, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But I want to give him all due respect. No,
I'm with you. I'm kidding you.
but so he tells us to pray ceaselessly. We should be finding how to glorify God in our work, in all of our work. And so, and then, you know, the hierarchy of like, your vocation is your number one is to God, then family, then your job. And so this was all new to me. So, I actually find that everything works out better and life is full of joy, more so than like secular life. Then when you do follow that hierarchy from God, family to your job, it makes my job way more fun, interesting. And worth the struggle I go to when I am gone for like 6 weeks, you know, away from my family. So,
well, that's cool. Yeah. So it's interesting. It's like we get the there's a cliche, right? The cart before the horse. But I mean, that really is what we do. We end up getting we get the thing that things are the thing that's supposed to be the means. We end up making it an end.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. The thing you're supposed to be doing all this for the sake of, you kind of relegate to the background. It's kind of like, well, you know, once a week I'll go do that. Or if I have time left over, I'll go ahead and knock out that prayer a little bit. But you treat it like it's a hobby
yeah.
or something. But this important real stuff, like money making, that's what you got to put your emphasis on, right? You know?
Well, yeah. And then, you know, St. JP too, man, he was really big on not really being a proponent of utilitarianism, right?
And like, right.
Which, and he talks about that all the time about means versus the ends. And we're in such a utilitarian culture where it's all about the means being the ends, right? So...
Yeah, and especially in the realm of the person, right? That's the persons, you can't reduce persons, you can't use people, right? Using people is not an option. And to reduce somebody to a means to something is just like, that's the worst use. And so we see that if you would like make a person into a coffee table, or you would like enslave someone or something, we see that so clearly. But when, you know, like two people say, hey, let's mutually use each other for pleasure. Hey, they both volunteered. That's not use, mm-hmm. because they both volunteered. You know, we just, in the modern world, we can't see that that's the same thing, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and I, before I became a Christian, I was very much a utilitarian in so many aspects of my life. And that's what I, that's how I kind of grew up. And I kind of grew up in a pretty unsafe, atmosphere, you know, with, without going too deep, I was, not, exposed to, you know, my parents divorced and lots of bad things happened around me in my upbringing. So, like utilitarianism became my coping mechanism, you know, just getting by, survival, basic survival, which isn't fair for an 8-year-old kid. Right. But, I've gone through all of my, all of my therapy and everything to understand, and been through reparenting and, enough to understand this and talk about it openly and realize like utilitarianism is the work of the devil. I think now looking back, it's, you know,
well, it's interesting. I remember, Father John Nuppel and then Deacon, Nathan Goebel is now Father Goebel. Now they're part of the Catholic Stuff You Should Know podcast that my friend Father Michael O'Loughlin's involved in. But way back when he was still a deacon, they did a Theology on Tap, and it was right about Halloween time, and it was called Zombies and the Thirst for Communion. And it was spectacular because they talked about the Walking Dead, and they said the thing that is the most frightening in the Walking Dead is not the scary zombies and things trying to eat you. It's the fact that everything has been reduced to sheer survival.
Yeah. Yeah.
That you have to spend every waking moment, and to just drop your guard for a moment and get some sleep or do something kind for someone is a luxury that you can rarely get in that world. And that's the thing that like is the most unsettling about that show. And I think that, you know, I kind of grew up in not maybe quite as bad a way, but in similar ways. And that's the thing, is you can't just drop your guard. You have to kind of survive in a way, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And then, so you take that into adulthood, and, you know, for me, it was like finding like peace with just not necessarily like women in the physical sense. It was more of an emotional sense, and yeah, and needing that love and acceptance and just to feel desired. And I just went on a rampage for a few years, you know. And so when I read, you know, Love and Responsibility and works of St. John Paul, I just the light went on. Because I couldn't put my conversion into words and why it meant so much to me until I read JP2 and or Carol Votiwa, you know, like at that time.
Yeah.
So I thank God for it, because now I can share both sides of the coin with people and sort of evangelize that way, you know.
I tell you what, that first 30, 40 pages of Love and Responsibility is such a beautiful thumbnail sketch of what this is all about persons and things and the difference between those two. I use stuff from there just constantly talking to people, especially the unchurched or kind of pagan types, you know?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So, yeah. So here I am trying to, to practice the true vocation, you know, my spiritual life and make that strong. And, speaking of this Walking Dead thing, I'm actually right in the middle of Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning, and this idea.
That is a spectacular. I tell you what, let's go to the break and pick that up on the other side, because that is a huge book and that's going to go long. So, all right. So let's head off to the break. And when we come back, we'll be with Michael Miley, and we're going to talk about Viktor Frankl, The Walking Dead, and Carol Wojtyla, and whatever else comes up. You're listening to The Counterposition.
Then how we crave a hanging in his dock.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
People singing, please don't stink, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your not confusing ends for means host, Andrew Whaley.
That's a good one.
I do like that one. And I'm here with Michael Miley, father, Catholic, drummer for the band Rival Sons. I should have put those in this different order. I should have said Catholic, father, then drummer for the Rival Sons.
Hey, you shouldn't call anybody father on earth, dude. You know that.
Dude. Yeah, my friend, father, son. Dang.
I always laugh. It's such a funny argument the Protestants have. Our sweet Protestant brothers, we love you. We just kid you. We kid you.
I kid. All right, so we're talking about Viktor Frankl right before we went out and the man's search for meaning. Mm-hmm. And so, in short, you know, Viktor Frankl is, he's this Austrian psychologist. He's a Jew. He ends up in Auschwitz, and he has experiences. He figures out who thrives and who gets crushed in this crucible of Auschwitz, and he starts seeing something common among the ones that can survive it and not be taken over by it. You know, why don't you pick it up from there and tell me what this means to you that you're reading right now?
Well, there, it's basically finding purpose or seeing the future, because when you get into the concentration camp life, it becomes just literally moment by moment survival. But he says we have a freedom of choice, and he points this out, that you have a freedom of choice in every moment to go inward and to find, you know, basically truth, beauty, and goodness is kind of what I, as my Catholic bias, you know, is seeing that you have that purpose and meaning and being able to see a future outcome, like a goal being met or something, you know?
Well, it's basically, he infounds this thing called logotherapy, which is basically meaning therapy, right? You know, it's like this, and he sees that the people, what's interesting though, is that in his world, it almost doesn't matter what the meaning and the purpose is, right? It's like, but I said one time that it's like, it's, you know, you see this man's search for meaning. And really, if you really understand the real game with the truth, beauty, and goodness and all that, the history of reality is meaning's search for man.
Yeah.
And it's the first one to have a vision of something and then act based on that vision was God. Yeah. It's like we are all, everything that exists, everything that is, that's not God, is a result of God having a kind of a vision and then acting on it, that end, and then acting for it, which is, but with him, it's just pure gift, right? So I don't know. I just see that there's something we tap into then, right? We tap into that kind of thing somehow through this meaning.
Yeah. And just to, not to be utilitarian, to be self-giving, you know, like that's what it comes down to. Our choice, praise the Lord, we don't have to spend our waking hours in a concentration camp. But we get to just have daily life and go to the grocery store, drive our cars, have patience on the road. I mean, to be self-giving, self-loving. One of the things I'm trying to do in Lent is be patient, you know, while I drive. Like, and I seem to be hitting every red light this for the last like 3 weeks since I've been home.
Wow.
And Lent started. But just this idea of being self-giving, to make that choice is where true happiness, I mean, back to JP2, it's like true happiness is in the true joy, is in self-giving, which is pretty much anti-utilitarian, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's I think that I find that everyone that I meet and I get to talk to inside or outside of the religious world, when you really start getting down to it and you start really talking to them and finding out kind of who they are, what they're about, what makes them tick, they're really looking for meaning. They really crave that. That is kind of, they're searching for it, or they've given up on there being any, or they've mistakenly attached it to something else. But it's like, man can't live on bread alone. It's man needs meaning.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and I heard someone say that the imagination is the faculty of meaning, so to speak, you know, and it's like, we got to picture some kind of a narrative, some kind of outcome. We have to picture something coming about that gives this activity or struggle or whatever some kind of a direction or an end, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean I'm just kind of learning about all this, and it's blowing my mind. I'm a new student to all this, but I certainly read a lot, and
than most people I know. You're like a voracious reader and listener of things.
Yeah, I just finished Peter Kreef's How to Be Holy, and it pretty much took my head off my shoulders and put it back on straight. Pretty really? Unbelievable. I mean, he's Peter Kreef has that unapologetic sweetness, you know, where he has a way of telling you like it is without, like, you know, hitting you over the head with a hammer, you know. And then, you know, about four people in the last, I don't know, couple months have recommended this Viktor Frankl book. And then I saw a meme on Instagram, one of my friends posted, and I'm like, I got to read this book. So I just started it a few days ago. Loving it.
It's pretty interesting. So here's a question. So when you're traveling and you're with Rival Sons and you're out there, you're doing promotions, you're hanging out backstage, you know, and I've hung out with you backstage by the bus and seen crazy people come screaming and yelling and wanting you to sign various things and all that. I mean, you interact with all kinds of people with all kinds of value systems, and in especially all kinds of cultures, because you just toured Europe and all this stuff. Do you have any kind of a snapshot or kind of an insight into kind of where people are at now and how they think and what they're looking for, what they've mistaken for meaning, or are they conscious of that search? Are they conscious of that hunger?
You know, I've had a handful of conversations where I could say, where people have come to me or asked me, whether they heard about my background on the internet or whatever. But I honestly don't, I'm not able to have like conversations where I could gauge that. I can make judgments from what I see. What I see is just the world is just becoming secular and sanitized, and everybody's taken this idea of church and state, the separation of church and state, and just run with it till the cows come, till we've sanitized it completely. And I always use the analogy of, sorry, I just hit my headphones really hard.
No, that's fine.
I use the analogy of the drum, the advent of the drum machine, and mm-hmm. how music used to be so visceral and so human and had so much feel in it. And, you know, you could feel some recordings, you feel like you're there in the room with the band, you know, and with the advent of the drum machine and being a drummer, it's kind of a comic relief thing for me. But at the same time, I think it's a good analogy. We're sanitizing everything, and people want to take like meaning out of everything and making it just like whatever you see is what you see is what you get. Scientific, natural world, naturalism, You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's,
and I think that sanitize is a good word, because it's basically, it's funny. The tragedy is that the more humid it is, the more kind of like the flaws are, right? Like, I've told you this story before, like whenever, when Jimmy Chamberlain quit Smashing Pumpkins, but got kicked out because he was just doing drugs or whatever. And then that guy, they brought that guy from Filter in. And he's like a metronome. The guy's like a drum machine. He's just so spot on tight that they were practicing the first time. And Billy was like, take him out, put some tequila shots in him, something, get him drunk. I can't play with him when he's that tight. It's too perfect. It's too tight. You know, because he was used to Jimmy, right?
Yeah.
And it's too clean. It's too precise.
Yeah.
Right? It's not human.
And I mean, and they're putting bands in, you can record into Pro Tools or whatever program. And then there's a thing called Beat Detective and then there's Auto Tune. So you could fix every single beat played and put it on a grid and make it perfectly gridded out and quantized, we call it. And you can also fix all the notes, the wrong notes. Or maybe the singer singing slightly flat, and you can fix all those notes. Now you take somebody like Alicia Keys, who's a great artist, and she naturally sings. She has a vibe of singing flat all the time, but it's like just slightly flat to make it hip. And then her producers don't fix her, and you have that. She still has that bit of rawness to the music, and you can feel it, you can hear it, you know.
I think that's the thing, is that there's I think we've forgotten how to have the kind of that weird kind of like that little flaw is important. So speaking of flaws, I always flaw and forget that the end of the break is coming. So let's head off to the break, and we got one more segment with Michael Miley, and you're listening to The Counterposition. We'll be right back.
Then all the color glass, that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love decked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your trying to come up with an adjective that isn't humble host. And I am here with Michael Miley, of the drummer of Rival Sons. Welcome back, Michael.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
I'm going to start this segment by saying something completely unprofessional. I miss your face, man. I miss you. I haven't seen you in so long. I miss you and Maria and all those people out there. I need to get out to Ventura for a visit.
I am so lucky to live where I live, just for so many reasons. But, you know, as a Catholic man, a family man, there's so much great community out here. Ventura, in the diocese of Auxiliary Bishop, Bishop Barron.
Yeah.
And, it's just so much good. Like, if you're thinking of a place to move, people want to say LA, Hollywood, just go 45 minutes to an hour west of Hollywood and you'll land in Camarillo, Ventura, Oxnard, you know, Santa Paula. It's just TAC College is out there. It's just super hip.
It is just such a sick, sick place that I loved living there. I lived off and on there for 11 years. And it's funny. I like living in Denver now because I'm single and there's plenty of stuff to do for single people here and all kinds of things to do. But I've always said that if I get married and I have a family and I can afford it in any way, I'd go back to Ventura County because it's just so many people that in so much community, so much support, and, you know, St. Augustine's Academy for schooling the kids and all that community around TAC, and just so much beautiful stuff. And not to mention just, you know, the climate that we were talking about in the first segment, the natural beauty, the coast and all that. I'm making myself homesick just talking about it. But all right, so you've been all over the world, talked to all these people and stuff. So, but now you're back home, and it looks like you got some changes coming up for Rival Sons that are going to be big life changes for you, right?
Yeah. We're signing a new record contract with a major label, and it's in the works right now, so I don't want to jinx it or give it away or say who it is, but we've been on an indie label for a while, for four records. We have six total records, and we have four on an indie label, and now we're moving to the major label. So it's pretty exciting. And to have the machine behind you is I think a big thing to have, and it's needed in the music business. You can only do so much with the sweat off your own back.
Yeah, no. And that's the thing, is that people have to understand that there's so many levels to this thing. People just see the music thing and they think of it on this one level of popularity or fame or whatever. But I know for you, there's at least three other levels of it. One of them is just it being just a straight up pain in the butt because you're traveling all over God and creation and away from your family. The other one is, on the good side, is it's your craft. I know how serious, and we've talked about this on the last show, how seriously you take the craft of percussion and of music in general, and taking lessons to get better, and you're such a master already. But the craft side, but then the other side is just the business side. It's a business. Just like if you were trying to get a new brand of carpeting out there nationally, where there's a new kind of carpet or something, you have to have
a marketing budget.
Yeah, you have to have a marketing budget. You have to be able to do something. So, I mean, that's, speak to that. Like, what does this change for you now? What makes it better? What gets worse now?
Well, I think in the positive way that I see it is we have six records. We have 7 years of road experience. We've all signed record deals. We're all married with kids. So the business is, it's real sober, you know. We're not like, yeah, you know, we're signing a record deal, you know, and just kind of blindly putting the ink to the page. We've been going back and forth, negotiating this deal, and, like businessmen. And
yeah,
but, we have such a solid fan base and a foundation, and playing live and playing, opening for so many different bands. Sorry, I just had an interruption, a guest. So many bands. I mean, I'm just saying our experience is we're ready. It's like we've been in the minor leagues, you know, for three or four seasons, and we're ready for the pros, you know, and our stats are good in the minors, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you've been doing this. I mean, you personally have been doing this for a while. I mean, you've been the drummer for Veruca Salt. You've played for like all kinds of people. And then you've been playing for six albums with Rival Sons. And I remember you putting on your Facebook page, like, the mad props on the new record from Jason Bonham. I mean, like, yeah. John Bonham's son, the drummer, anytime they reunite the drummer for Led Zeppelin. I mean, it's like, so you've got stats, but you've got accolades too. I mean, you've got a serious reputation both as a band, but as a drummer yourself, right?
Yeah. And so my point is that we're ready for the next level. We're ready for that major label marketing. Major labels have connections to internationally and globally. And so Whereas if you're on an indie label, there's only their Rolodex, you know, is only as big as their Rolodex, and major labels are, you know, this particular one has been around for a long time. And so, and plus the, you know, the head of radio is super excited about us and it's been a fan for a long time. The head of marketing is, the head of licensing knows about us. We are sort of not a household name yet, but we're known in the industry. And so yeah, a lot of people are excited and we need that excitement. We need that push. Because like you said, if you have a new carpet or if you want to market a new soda, you know, you need a grip of money really to market that and get it in Rolling Stone magazine and Mojo and NME and to make a video and then have that video pushed on certain websites. I mean, there's so much that goes into a marketing campaign when you release a major record.
But I mean, like you're good. I'm just thinking about this as like how this interfaces with your life. Cause I'm interested in Rival Sons as a band. I'm interested in you guys as a business. I'm interested, but I'm really interested in kind of like you're going from, yeah, I mean, you've been playing to 10, 20,000 people in an arena and stuff on this tour with Black Sabbath. But I mean, are you ready to like drive through Los Angeles and see your face on a billboard? It's like, that's a,
yeah. Oh yeah. And you know, selfishly as a, you know, as a just crazy Bible thumping Catholic, I'm very excited because I think it's for the glory of God that I'm going to be able to, reach that many more people, you know, musically, spiritually, emotionally, physically, you know, like, you know, at a live show and touch people. I'm going to have the means to reach a lot more people, you know?
I mean, that's fascinating. It's like it's interesting. I know people who are in the music industry or who are famous or who do, or, you know, make movies or something. And it's kind of, that side of things fights the side of them that is kind of the deeper side or the more meaning desiring side or the spiritual side. And it's interesting. I really, really trust that this is who you are and who you're called to be. Cause I know you pretty well. We're friends off the air and stuff. And it's like, there is no conflict really there. You're built to use this, you know, it's like you, this is like, great. I get a bigger platform to be who I am and for people to kind of find out what I think is reality, you know, in this process, you know, I'm stoked for you.
Yeah. I'm stoked too. I tried quitting. I tried seeking what God's will is for me. And I keep ending up on stage behind drums. I've quit three times in my career and thinking I wanted to dedicate myself to spiritual life. And so here I am just knowing what God's will is. I think I know what it is. And so I'm very happy.
Well, that's awesome. And I think that, you know, when I see someone, I know a couple people in this world who are Catholics or Christians who are just like straight up loaded. Like, I mean, they like billionaires, right? And you see how that they are and how hard they work to give their money away in a right way and all that. And I say to myself, oh, if God could trust me with that much cash, I would have it. And I think of you like talent and kind of fame and kind of insight, you know, being able to get in the public eye. If God could trust me with that, he would give it to me, but he can't. But he can trust you with that because you've paid the price. So
I think if you, as a sword, like I think I'm out of the forge, out of the fire and being pounded with a mallet. I mean, I think there's still a little bit more pounding to do, but I'm at least in like, I'm not just ore being pounded with a mallet, being stuck in, you know, the heat, you know, I'm like now ready to cut some stuff up.
All right. Well, I tell you what, we're gonna have to cut this episode. So, Michael, thanks for coming out, man. We'll do this again now that we have this tool.
Yeah, yeah. I'm excited.
Okay, right on.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for everybody for listening to Andrew.
All right, Rival Sons, Michael Miley. Let's pull the plug. Pop the cork on another episode of The Counterposition.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.